the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host. Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for joining today. This is episode 25, and I am so excited for our guest today. So we all know the latest reality dating show everyone is talking about on Netflix is season 2 of Indian Matchmaking. If you're like me, you binged the season in a few short days, and today we are talking to Sheetal Patel from the show. I loved watching Sheetal on the show. I thought she presented herself in such a lovely way, and she just had such a positive energy about her, and so I was super excited that she said yes when I reached out about coming on the podcast. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode. We get all the scoop about what it was like being on the show, working with Seema Aunty. We have some girl talk about dating in New York City in your 20s and 30s. We talk about the mindset work she's done and her new relationship that we all saw a glimpse of at the tail end of the show. So it was a really fun conversation. I hope you guys enjoy. Okay, let's get into it. Hey, Sheetal, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hi, Julie. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I almost wish we had started our recording like 5 minutes ago.
I know. Well, hopefully we can keep this casual and do some girl talk.
Yes. So, you know what's funny? I've actually been following you for some time, well before Indian Matchmaking, because I listen to Currently Cringing. You're friends with Anisha, and you've been on her podcast a few times. So I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that you were going to be on Indian Matchmaking.
Wow, I did not know that. So what did you think of we get into a lot of girl talk on that podcast?
Yes, no, I loved it. I thought it was great. It was so fun listening to you guys talk about the same things that I talk to my friends about. So for everyone who's not watched Indian Matchmaking, tell us a little bit about yourself. You know, how old are you? What do you do? Where do you live? Tell us whatever you want to tell us.
Yeah, sure. So for anyone that hasn't seen the show, I'm 38. I'll be 39 next month. I'm a Virgo. It's officially Virgo season. So I currently live in New York City. I grew up in New Jersey, and I've been in this area pretty much my whole life. But I will be moving to Miami. And so I'm pretty much back and forth between New York and Miami currently. And then I do have a job. A lot of people are wondering if I work or not. I do have a job. So I work in the energy industry. And so what we do is businesses in New York City that want to go more green and reduce their carbon footprint, my company will actually help finance those projects.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I know a lot of us were wondering what you do for work, because that part was a little elusive. So thanks for sharing.
Sure.
So I'm curious. You know, when you first told people that you were going to be on the show, I'm assuming there was a casting and, you know, shortlisting process. When you found out that you were going to be on the show, were people in your circles generally supportive, or did you get some people who were trying to tell you that, you know, going on reality show was going to be a bad idea?
So I would say, you know, I've actually done reality before. So I did a show on Bravo called In a Man's World. So that show was actually... we didn't really get a lot of press for it, but it was, in my opinion, actually pretty groundbreaking, because it talked about a lot of the stereotypes and gender biases in the South Asian culture. So, you know, I loved doing that. And then when Indian Matchmaking was being cast, I was like, oh, this is great, because we can talk about, you know, when I started the process, I was 37. And so that's already like way, you know, over the hill for Indian people and, you know, for Indian women not to be married. So I was like, oh, this will be a great way to talk about, you know, that and bring those issues to light. So my circle was pretty supportive of that for the most part. But there were definitely people that felt like, you know, I had some conservative friends that were like, oh, if you go on reality, you know, guys may not want to date you because you're on TV and they might view you a certain way. And so, you know, they felt like it would hinder my chances of finding someone, whereas I genuinely felt like it would help.
Yeah. Well, and I also feel like if someone had a problem with you being on reality TV show, then that's not your person.
Exactly. Exactly.
So yeah, I love what you said, that like now there's this platform to actually talk about some of these issues. You know, like a lot of the critics for Indian matchmaking when it first came out, like 2 years ago, were saying like, oh, it's problematic because it highlights sexism and colorism and casteism. And it's like, I see it as that's why the show is important, because, you know, those are still such prevalent issues in Indian culture. And it's now there's this platform or this show to put those issues out to the world and have this like vehicle for those conversations and how we can like move away from it. So I think it was like important in that sense.
Agreed. And I also think, you know, just to touch upon, I think my age was a big thing. You know, we filmed quite a bit and we did talk about that. And so I think, you know, even bringing that to light was great. I don't know if you recently saw, but Seema Andy got a little bit of backlash because she mentioned the age difference between Priyanka Chopra and Nick Jonas. And I think like that stigma is there. I mean, I've dated my current boyfriend is a year older, but I've dated younger men. And so I think even in that sense with the ageism, I read comments that like, oh, she's 38. You know, she doesn't really have a right to be picky and things like that. So I think for me, that was really important to bring that, you know, issue to light.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say was the best and worst part about being on a reality dating show?
Oh my gosh. I would say the best part was that it really pushed me out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you're dating in without a camera, I felt like a lot of times, you know, I would like find something that was wrong or it was like a little thing and I wouldn't continue with the date. Whereas this forced me in a way to actually finish the date and then, you know, really get to know someone a little bit better just because that was part of the process. And that's what I signed up for. So I think that part was really great because it pushed me way, way out of my comfort zone in dating. I would say the worst part was, you know, I think going on a first date and meeting people in general is a little scary and intimidating. And, you know, when you're going on a first date, I get nervous as well. And so I think having a camera in front of you made that even like it exacerbated that even more and like, made it even worse. Yeah. So it was like, you know, you have these cameras around you and you're trying to be, of course, you want to be authentic and natural and you want to like, and I, you know, genuinely was trying to meet someone. And so it was, I think that was a little bit tough just because you had the nerves and then you were on a date with these cameras. So some of the dates did come off a bit cringy and awkward. So I think that part was challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can imagine that was going to be one of my questions was, did you feel awkward going on these dates with the cameras rolling around? So, I mean, it's also like almost like a once in a lifetime experience. Mm-hmm. What an opportunity to memorialize this part of your life, which is like really cool. But I really commend you guys because, you know, putting yourself out there on national TV, not even national, whatever, global. International, worldwide, global. Yeah. Like that takes a level of mental fearlessness because you are allowing the world to come to all these conclusions about you as a person, you know, and come to their own judgments about you from a couple hours of highly edited filming. And, you know, like if you get on TikTok, pretty much every second or third TikTok video is like some random person making a whole 15-second clip about like a single character from the show and like sharing their opinions. And like that can be hard, you know, like I saw Vishal from the show. He posted.
Oh, my gosh. He's getting.
Yeah. He did that. Like it was either a TikTok or Instagram reel where he was reading mean tweets that people had tweeted about him. And like, you know, that's what people on the internet do. And I'm glad that he can have a sense of humor about it and laugh about it. But like, I don't care who you are. Having to see strangers write mean stuff about you is like not easy.
I totally agree. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point because and sometimes people, it is a reality show and there is a level of editing. You know, I will say Indian matchmaking, to my knowledge, is not scripted. You know, I was never pushed to say a certain thing, but we still don't get to show the full spectrum of who we are. You know, we have so many different layers. So people are getting to see maybe like, I don't know, a fourth of who we are at best, right? And so, and then they're forming these judgments and these opinions. And of course, like anyone that's on reality TV, to a degree, it is what you sign up for. But I've got to tell you, some of those comments, I mean, you, as strong as I am, I'm like, wow, that shakes you.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I think You, though, you presented yourself wonderfully on the show. And I'm not just saying that. Thank you. You really did. And I think what I liked about you was that, one, you were kind, you were respectful toward your dates or C-Monty. And like, I think the energy that I got from watching you as an outsider was this like growth oriented, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's either we win or we learn kind of outlook and like way of thinking. And I know you work with like a mindset coach, which we'll get to in a bit. But how was the process working with C-Monty? And like, tell us a little bit more about how she helped you open up your heart more. I think I read that in one of the articles that was published about you. So tell us a little bit about that, like working with C-Monty and how you think you kind of benefited from that experience.
Yeah, sure. And so I'm happy you brought that up because I do want to clarify. So I did say on the show that, you know, she helped me open up my heart more. But I wouldn't necessarily attribute that to her. I would attribute it to the process, the matchmaking process. So I would say, you know, going into the process, this was something completely new for me. And I felt like even though I was doing the work on myself and, you know, we can get into the mindset coach in a bit, but I wasn't really putting myself out there. You know, I don't know if I thought like someone was going to come knocking on my door or what it was. And, you know, like many people, I have been in the dating game in New York for so long. The pandemic did not make that easier at all. And so I was at a point where I was, you know, sort of just like working on myself. I was sitting back and like I was definitely taking a back seat to dating. So as I got into the matchmaking process and I started going out on more dates and being in front of the camera and actually talking about relationships, I realized I had all these blocks to love and finding love. So in that way, at that point, you know, I was like, okay, I need to open myself up more, not only in the matchmaking process, because, you know, as you know, like season one didn't really have any successful matches. So I was like, I'm not going to put all my eggs in this basket and, you know, in C-Monty's basket and rely on her to find me someone. So I like really hit the pavement. Like I started asking, you know, my family if they knew anyone, my friends. You know, I was like Facebook messaging people. Like I really, really, once I started the matchmaking process, I was like all in. I put myself out there.
Good. That's so great to hear.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say working with C-Monty specifically, you know, I think she's nice. I think her heart is in the right place. She has good intentions. I do believe that. But I think that she really needs to sort of, she needs to get with the times with the actual process, you know, because there were a lot of her and I mean, a lot of it wasn't shown, but we definitely had some fundamental differences in the sense where she was like, you know, she believes that 60 to 70% is great. Like if you get 60 to 70%, you know, that's a win. And, you know, I say this on the show, but to me, that's settling. You know, I think if you have your shit together, you work on yourself, you know, you as a high value woman deserve 100%, you know, and 100% is perception, right? It's what you think is 100%. And the other interesting thing is I don't know C-Monty's husband, but just kind of from what I hear, you know, he is very supportive of her. He seems like a great father and a great husband. So I was like, you didn't settle for 60%.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So I think I think in that sense, there can be a bit of an update, I will say, to her process.
For sure.
Yeah.
And it's like
her heart is in the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I took away from C-Monty as well, because hearing her talk is exactly like hearing my parents talk. It's their generation. So I can't, you know, sit here and like feel anger toward that because they just come from like a different generation. But I do agree with you. Like, I think she could kind of benefit from moving toward the current times. And I think as far as like the 60 to 70% philosophy, I mean, I totally am with you. It's hard for me to rationalize that too. I mean, I guess the way I see it is like, first, you got to determine what your deal breakers are, right? Like those are foundational. There's no wiggle room on those. And then there's like the nice to haves. But I think the most important thing is like, how does this person make you feel when you're with them? Like, are you on the same frequency? You know, can you laugh with them? Can you be yourself? Like, can you dream about the future in a way that's alignment? And if you can't do those things, then like, keep it moving, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And of course you have your, you know, you, we all had this, you go in and you have a list because you're working with a matchmaker and ultimately she's going to ask you, you know, what are you looking for? You know? And so you have these things that you have written out, but ultimately, I mean, at least for me, and it seems like even for you, like it comes down to that ceiling. So, you know, you have, you align with someone with like the values and what you guys are looking for, and you have the same goals, but, or goals that you both can work towards together, but it really does come down to that feeling. To me, it's just as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. What was dating like in New York City throughout your 20s and 30s? Like, what were the types of men that you were coming across?
Oh my God. Okay. So, dating in New York, I always say this because it's so true. It is a beast like no other. I mean, it is a city full of, I mean, everyone's successful. Everyone's, you know, like looks good. They keep themselves like in, like whatever, like great shape, whatever it is. So there's a lot of competition. There are a lot of options. And so I felt like when I was dating in my 20s, and I probably wasn't in the mindset to, you know, be open to even being in a serious relationship, but I always found that the guys that I was dating in my 20s and then even into my early 30s, they were not consistent, and they really, like, it was always like, what's the next best thing? Or they would, you know, breadcrumb, like they would kind of like keep you on the hook for a little bit, and then it would just be a hookup, and then it wouldn't really turn into anything more. So, and you know, I felt like that happened quite a bit for me just because there's so many options in this city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've never lived in New York, but, or New York City, but I would imagine just the sheer population density across such a small geographic area. Like, yeah, it's so overwhelming. And then I feel like at some point you're just kind of running into the same people in the dating world, like over and over again.
Definitely. Especially if you're dating, you know, I was specifically looking for someone Indian. So there was a lot of overlap between my friends and I, and they're like, oh, you're going out with, you know, X person. I went out with them a few weeks ago. You know, he's an asshole, or watch out for this red flag, or whatever it is, you know? So there's a lot of that. Like, since you're running in the same circles, you're ultimately like kind of dating the same people, and it gets challenging.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been open to dating white people or someone that's not Indian?
Yeah. So I think in my 20s, I tried to do that. But I just felt like, you know, and maybe things would be different now, but I felt like when I was open to that in my 20s, just culturally, we just didn't vibe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I get you. And then what about the apps? Like, were you on the apps like Dilmil and Hinge and Bumble and all of those?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I tried that. And the thing that I found, which is, I don't know if it's because I'm older. I don't know if it's like a your generation thing. I don't know. But I would get on there and people just wanted to be pen pals. Like, they would message me and they'd be like, hey, what's up? Or, hey, how's the weather? And I never, to me, that's just the lowest level of conversation. You know, mm-hmm. I'm like, ask if you want my attention or if I want someone's attention, like, I'm going to ask like a genuine question that has some thought behind it, you know? And so I just felt like, okay, I didn't like the apps at all because there was always this back and forth on the messenger and then they'd never want to meet up.
Oh, and yeah. Like, what the hell? You're in the same city.
Yeah. What is this? Like, sometimes they'd be living in my neighborhood and they wouldn't want to meet up. And I'm just like, so you just want me to keep you company over messenger. I didn't understand that. So I kind of got a little sick of that. And then there was a lot of catfishing, which I went through.
Really? So,
a lot of that. So, like, you know, I think this happens quite a bit with Indian guys in height. So, yeah. So, like, you know, so they would say that they're, and to me, it's like, it's not the height that's the issue, it's the lie. Yeah. So, you know, they'd be like, oh, I'm 5'9", and then I'm 5'2". And with heels, I'm probably like 5'4", 5'5". So then when I meet them, they're my height. So I was like, okay, you're like, we're the same height.
Yeah.
You know, and I, at a certain point, I was like, should I start traveling with a measure? You know, should I go on the date with like a ruler or a measuring?
Yeah.
No, I'm like, yeah, it was a lie. It was just a lie. And I'm like, or they would put pictures up from, I went out with this one guy that you know, my friend knew him, but I met him on the app. And so he had a picture up from 10 years ago. And my friend's like, yeah, he's great, you know, whatever. Take it to the bar. I look around and this dude looks like my uncle. Like he's looks oh my God. Like he was actually, the picture was legitimately 10 years old. He was a different person. And so it's not, and not even, it's not even about superficiality. It's just about the lie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. I think that like you're allowed to embellish one inch.
Exactly. That's fine. I think an inch is fine.
Yeah. Like I remember that happened to me too. One time I met someone on the app and this is like a couple years ago, but we were in different states. It was long distance. So whatever. We talked for like a month or two. Really great chemistry. He put on his he put on his profile that he was 5'11". Mm-hmm. I meet him in person like after two months of talking almost every day. And this guy was maybe 5'7 on a good day. And I'm like, yeah. 4 inches is a lot. Like that is straight up like a lie and catfish.
That's a lie. It's unacceptable. Yeah. Unacceptable. So after going through, you know, the pen pal situation and the catfishing, I was like, all right, I'm going to try a different approach and just use my network.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, we talked about you not wanting to settle, and that was something that really resonated to viewers. And you, you know, ultimately, we find out on the show, you met someone that has all of what you're looking for, and you didn't have to lower your standards or compromise on what you truly wanted. But I'm curious, did you ever find yourself almost settling with anyone in your younger years because of all the pressure from your family and perhaps, you know, being the eldest sibling and feeling like everyone's waiting for you to get married? How did you kind of deal with that?
Absolutely. So I've had a string of really like pretty serious relationships with the wrong guys. Mm-hmm. And so in my 20s, I was dating somebody very seriously. And I knew in my heart, I mean, there were so many red flags. And I actually ended up moving down to Baltimore for this relationship. And even though I knew that there were so many red flags, I felt like extreme pressure because I knew my sister was going to get engaged. And, you know, my parents never put that pressure on me, but my family definitely did. So it was like, you know, you think about it and you feel like a failure. You just feel like you're not good enough because you're missing that one thing. And I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to make this relationship work, even though I knew I was settling. And ultimately it failed and it didn't work, which I'm so thankful for. But I felt there were definitely moments where I felt desperation, you know, in my 20s, and I felt like I had to go that route. And a lot of that's now I know stemmed from, you know, low self-confidence.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. I think so many people can relate to that, including myself. Okay, so let's talk about your current relationship. How did you meet your current partner, Niraj? Is that how you say his name, Niraj?
Niraj.
Okay, Niraj. Yeah.
So it's a kind of a little bit of a long story, but I'll try to shorten it. So in last December, we have a mutual friend. And so she sent me a message on Instagram. She knew that I was looking to meet someone. And she was like, yeah, I have this friend, you know, in Miami. He's recently single. So I did a little bit of stalking because he has like videos up on YouTube and all this stuff. So I was like, stalked him, seemed like a nice guy. And I thought he was super cute. So I messaged her back and I was like, hey, you know, can you set it up? And she said she would. And then I don't know if like the holidays came around or whatever happened, but she just didn't follow through. And then in January, my middle sister, I have two younger sisters. And so my middle sister was already down in Boca. She moved to Boca with her family, and her neighbors are doctors. So we were just talking and I was like, you know, telling my sister, I was like, Arbita, like, you know, I really, really want to meet this guy. Like, what do we do? It was like some serious stalking.
Yeah.
And so she was like, okay, well, you know, her neighbors are doctors and the physician, South Asian physician community in South Florida is not that big. So they happened to know him. And so they called him like right on the spot. And they're like, you have to reach out to this girl. And so he ended up messaging me. And I will say the best thing that we did. So, you know, we obviously did long distance or are doing long distance. And we didn't even, we might have talked on the phone once, but we texted for about a month and a half before we actually met in person. I went down to Miami to meet him. And in that period of texting, you know, I felt like maybe if we met, because he's very different from who I used to normally date. You know, I always dated like the asshole, like finance guys. And he's like, just like complete sweetheart, total opposite of that, you know? And so like, I think building that rapport over a month and a half and really getting to know each other. I mean, we shared songs and podcasts and we talked about just so many different things. I think that really built a bond, and we knew there was something there before we even met.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you guys are both a very good looking couple.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I know you talked about your skincare routine on one of your Instagram stories, so I won't ask you about it, but you have such youthful skin. Like, the fact that you're almost 40 is like almost mind blowing. What was different about him versus others that you've dated in the past?
So, you know, I won't say that. So we met after that whole texting thing for about a month and a half. So we met in person. And even when we met in person, you know, I knew something was there, but I don't think for either of us, it wasn't like love at first sight or like, you know, these crazy sparks. But we had it was weird. Like, he's just a little more old school. So, you know, even it took him so long to even kiss me. He's like super old school in that sense. But we had as cheesy as it sounds, like we had a friendship. And so we were like, I never had that with a significant other. We were genuinely friends with each other before, you know, he even officially asked me out. And so I think that in itself was different. And then going into the relationship, the thing that I love about him is, you know, he didn't have any issue with me being on this show. He truly, truly lets me shine. And he's secure. Like, I have not dated a guy that is like that secure, you know, with himself. And sometimes I have that, you know, anxious attachment style. So you do need a secure guy for that. And so I don't know, he just always lets me shine, and he has no, like, he just supports me in what I could be like, I want to go to the moon. And he's like, all right, let's do it. You know, how do we do it? Let's find a solution. He's like that kind of person.
I love that. Yeah. I'm a big believer that you need a date within your energy lane. So if you're a very secure person, like, you need to find someone who's also a secure person. And those are the relationships that are truly going to thrive, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I really do feel like it's like such a buzzword or whatever, alignment, but you know, I feel like we're truly in alignment, and you know, we're building something together. It feels like a team. It doesn't feel like, because in past relationships I always felt like it was me against the other person. You know, but this feels like a team and a friendship. So I think I would say that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, and what an amazing feeling knowing that it was 100% worth the wait, and that you dodged so many of those bullets by not settling for people that weren't right for you.
I know. And I tell my younger cousins this, and I think my aunties are like, oh my God, Sheetha, like, do not talk to them. But I tell them that, you know, in our culture, it's like, oh, get married early. You know, the older you get. And I hear actually from friends too, like friends that grew up here, like educated friends that are like, oh, if you wait too long, it's just like the leftovers, or, you know, you're not going to get what you want if you keep waiting. But I actually think if you wait, you will get what you want, because that patience pays off. You know who you are. You're secure in yourself. You're more financially stable. You know, you've had all these life experiences. So I tell people to wait. I'm like, just wait.
Yeah.
Wait for the right person.
Totally. I mean, a lifetime is a long time to be with the wrong person and to be unhappy. So I had read, and I know this was mentioned on the show as well, but you worked with a mindset coach. So tell us about that experience and what kind of inspired you to want to work with one, and how did that, you know, kind of impact your journey?
Yeah. So it was interesting when I started working with her when the pandemic hit, and we were all in lockdown. So that was, I think, March of 2020, I want to say. So I had, you know, all of these failed relationships. I couldn't figure out what I was, I guess, doing wrong. And so one of my friends suggested that I work with a mindset coach. And she was like, maybe you need to reframe how you're looking at things. And so she introduced me to Lauren, my mindset coach, who I still work with on and off. But I was in such a dark place at that time where, you know, I felt like I was just on autopilot. Like I wasn't really living life. And so what we did was when we started working together, we didn't even get into relationships. We spent, I think, almost 4 or 5 months working on what we call self-concept. And so that was what I felt about myself. And we found out through the work that we did together that I didn't really value myself. And so she was like, that's what you're attracting. And as woo-woo as that sounds, it is so true. When you're putting out, you know, like hopeless, lack energy, that's exactly what you get.
Totally.
And so we spent, it was not overnight. I mean, I've been working with her for over 2 years, but we spent those first few months really trying to deprogram all of those limiting beliefs. And then once we did that, you know, then momentum started to pick up. And by no means was it like, oh, I changed my mindset and like, I meet the guy of my dreams. It wasn't like that. But I realized like, I wasn't really going out with unavailable men. They may not have been my soulmate, but I was attracting guys that were more and more in line with what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And eventually turned into the person that I was looking for.
Yeah. I mean, I think like all of the, just like the inner work that you've done, whether it's like through the mindset coaching or just anything else that you've done to put yourself first, I think all of that really showed through on the show.
Thank you. I always say this, like, even if you're, you know, in a relationship, and I said this when the show came out, you know, for me, it wasn't about the happy ending. Of course, I'm happy, but it's not an ending. It's the journey. Like the work keeps going. And you have to, I work every day. You have to bring it back to yourself and you have to make sure that you're good. Otherwise, everything around you, including your relationships, will suffer.
Yeah. And I think also like we come from a culture that almost conditions us to like think small, right? Like you kind of mentioned that we kind of talked about it just a little while ago, but like it's like, oh, you know, take the safe route, like don't do anything outside the box, don't deviate from this perfect timeline. And that in itself creates limiting beliefs. And especially like when, you know, you're when it comes to relationships and you're 30 plus in our culture, like you start hearing things like, oh, you're too old to have high standards. And like when you are engulfed in that kind of world where that's all you hear, like that can really start to get in your head. And so it can take just an outside third party, you know, digging into your life and helping you kind of like reprogram those thoughts and teach you different skills. Like all of that can create like a world of difference, but you have to be willing to take that first step. So good Absolutely. For you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think, you know, at least from what I've in my own experience, I think in our culture, there is still a bit of a stigma with getting help. And, you know, while my mindset coach isn't a therapist, it was a form of therapy for me. And so I think, you know, talking about that and bringing that to light and, you know, letting people know, like, it's totally fine to do that. You know, it helps you quite a bit.
Totally. Yeah. I'm like a huge fan of investing yourself, whether it's through coaching programs or masterminds or, you know, other people. Like if you can prioritize that, you know, it is worth it because like, the idea is, you know, you invest some time and money up front to give you the skills and tools that you can use for a lifetime. And if you're not seeing results you want doing things your way, then like continuing to do those same things is not going to yield anything different. You know, like you're just going to be a hamster stuck on a wheel. So good for you for doing that. And again, like I think all of that work that you did really shine through on the show.
Oh, thank you.
Let's see. Okay, last question. If you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I would tell my younger self to live in the moment and just focus on staying present. Because I remember when I was in my 20s, and you know, you're never going to get that carefree time back, you know, when you're out of college and you're making money and, you know, you don't have to worry really about anything at that moment. And so I would always worry about what's next, or I'll be happy when I get X, you know, whether it was in my career, relationship, whatever it was. So if I could go back in time, I would really do my absolute best to stay present and stay in the moment.
Yeah, beautiful. I love that. Like, just keep living your life. Don't let that next thing prevent you from being able to just be present and, you know, make the most of the current moment. Mm-hmm. Well, I love this. So before we wrap up, though, because I know we've got some time, before we wrap up, I wanted to finish with some fun rapid fire questions to get to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So what was your first job? Your first W-2 paying job.
Oh, W-2. Okay. Because I was like, oh, this is my parents' store. So actually right out of school, I started working at an energy company in Jersey.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned you did something before that. I was kind of saying W-2, like not babysitting, but maybe something different. Like if you worked at a store or something like that in high school.
Yeah.
But...
So I worked at Victoria's Secret in the mall. That was my first.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Went to the mall. I really aged myself. Well, everyone knows my age.
I know malls are like so obsolete now. Like, you go into a mall and it's like kind of depressing. What is the first concert that you attended?
The first concert. Oh my gosh, I have to. Let me think. What was the first concert that I went to? Backstreet Boys.
Oh, okay. I love Backstreet Boys. Do you prefer sentimental gifts or practical gifts?
Sentimental, by the way.
Okay. What do you think is the most attractive quality about someone in a romantic way?
So not just their... Oh, so nothing physical, like not a smile or anything like that.
It could be anything. Whether it's you think it's their smile or their sense of humor or intelligence or...
I would say that to me, it's being present.
I like that. Last question. For a first date, would you rather get coffee or do a sit-down dinner?
So I've changed my view on this. So back in the day, I would be like, oh my God, they have to like sweep me off my feet and take me to dinner. But then you're stuck with them. So I will say for anyone that's hitting the pavement, dating, just do the coffee. You know, before I was like, oh, that's so low effort, but it's actually very efficient. And you can get to know someone pretty well over a coffee. I would do a coffee. Or you know, an activity like a bike ride or a walk or something.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, it's low investment is kind of how mm-hmm. I see it. And if you're not having a good time, it's like easy to dip out. And I think especially if it's someone that you met on a dating app, like, or someone that you don't really know, like, I'd rather do coffee. But if it's someone that, like, for me, if it's someone that I've known for a while, like, maybe I've known them through work or whatever, and they want to take me out on a date, then, like, I would want dinner at the very least.
Yeah. Because it's not like, you know, when we were in high school, I was like, oh, they pick you up in their car. Like, no one's doing that anymore. No one's picking you up. Like, you'd be lucky if they paid for your Uber home. So just do the coffee.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, that is all we have. Actually, no, before we end, tell us where people can find you on the show.
So my Instagram is The Real Sheepo Patel. So you guys can catch me there. And TikTok is also The Real Sheepo Patel, but that's not really up to date yet. You can find me on Instagram.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Sheetho. I can't wait for our listeners to hear this episode and hear all the gems that you shared with us. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me, Julie. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.